Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. And today's edition, not like the last one, that's why we call it the new WHFR Journal, January 6, 2012. I even wrote that down wrong in my notepad here. It is a new year. Happy New Year. Another chance to get it right or to make it better, right? Yeah, I mean, that's what New Year's is all about. And I'm sure Dennis Reimars, my WHFR news director, is going to agree with that, but maybe not. Happy New Year, Dennis.
Happy New Year. Yeah, how can you argue with that? Every time I think of it, a new semester, we start over, right? Everything's a fresh start. So I like thinking of it that way.
That's a nice thing at college. My daughter in the public schools, she has the same kids, same classes, same hours for a whole year.
Entire year. Yep.
Yeah. Which is okay. But that renewal of let's try new things, let's get it better. From a teacher's standpoint, you're always, I always tried to be improving and making changes and keeping the course relevant, especially in telecommunications, where things are always changing, technologies, businesses merging, and so on all the time. Social impact is always an issue with telecommunications. And so, it is exciting. And hopefully those other people, they pass the classes, or most of them anyway, and they're going to take their next step too, which is very exciting for them. Go to the next more advanced class, or use some of their skills in some slightly different and appropriate way.
Well, and that's a good point. And the semester does begin on Monday, but it's not too late for people to take classes. Classes are open, and then as you know, there are also 8-week classes that are not the full amount. Well, of course, we have one here for this TCM 189 class.
Right. Yes, our WHFR staff training class is worthy of a plug here. Mm-hmm. It is an 8-week only course, 2 hours a week, and about an hour of homework. Doing projects and investigating WHFR each week. So that's the way we get our staff. That's the only way we get new staff, either from enrolled students here in the academic program or from our College of Lifelong Learning. You can take the class either way, whichever is appropriate, either for academic credit or in lifelong learning in order to get a pass or fail. And if you do successfully complete, that is, get a C or better or a pass grade in lifelong learning, then you can volunteer at WHFR and we'll assign you as appropriate to your skills. And not everybody wants to be a DJ or can be, for that matter, but we have a lot of different tasks and needs behind the scenes to keep things going. Your own daughter, Brittany,
My daughter is
going to be taking staff training this first 8 weeks, and I wish her well. But she's already working here at WHFR. We have one work-study job on campus. Jobs on campus are all work-study because the college can't afford to pay for it. The federal government pays for 80% of the salary of these people. It's just entry-level pay, minimum wage. But since they're already on campus, they get to help us in the science labs and the telecom labs and the library and at WHFR. And Brittany, I guess, started the college here last year.
Yep, she was last winter.
Right, and got this job, maybe on recommendation from her dad. But it's relatively easy, sort of receptionist, but there's some official FCC responsibilities, logging responsibilities, too, that are part of it. And for some reason, who knows why, I don't think you twisted her arm, did you, Dennis? She decided to take the training class because maybe she needed an extra credit, but she wanted to get a little more involved, and that's the first step.
But I tried to talk her out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But even the College of Lifelong Learning class, which has some enrollment this semester, and so I'll be meeting that person next Wednesday. Classes start for us with staff training Wednesday night, 6:30 to 8:20. And again, 8 weeks in a row, and then you're done one way or the other. Or they're Thursday afternoons from 1:10 to 3 o'clock. And if you're interested as just a member of the community who you don't need the academic credit, but you want to get involved with WHFR or see what we're doing, the cost of the class is the same as it would be for 1 hour of tuition credit in the academic area. And, of course, that's more if you're not a Dearborn resident. And there's a discount. There's a lower charge for people who are Dearborn residents, since we are funded by millage paid for just by the people of Dearborn. So that's sort of their payback if they want to come and take classes, them and their families. get that a little bit less cost. I think it's about, is it $140 a credit hour right now?
It's about half. It's about a little over 70 for a resident and almost about 140 for a non-resident.
Right. Okay. So that's a good deal. And
it's a great deal.
For WHFR staff training, there's no textbook required. We give you the documents. There is reading involved and studying. There's a final exam, and you get to try your hand at doing an off-the-air pseudo radio show.
Yeah, you put together a 30-minute demo.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. And if you're interested in that, just go to hfcc.edu and either go for the academic class, go into the telecommunication offerings. That's TCM. It's TCM 189. And if it's College of Lifelong Learning, I think they simply call it Radio Workshop.
That's right.
WHFR Radio Workshop, they call it.
And then TCM 189 is WHFR staff training.
Exactly the same content, same knowledge, same assignments both ways, but lifelong learning is pass-fail, and academic, of course, you're going to get what grade you deserve, A through E. Hopefully nobody has that problem. So looking forward to that starting up next week, as all the classes, as you said, start if they are a Monday class, they start on Monday next week, beginning of the winter semester. Very, very exciting here at HFCC. And today we're hosting in the Student Center building where the WHFR studios are. We're looking out our windows to the cafe. Not too busy right now, but they just had the lunch period for a big conference of the PBA.
What is the PBA?
Peanut butter. No, that's
Pro Bowling
PBA.
Association.
No, it's the Business Professionals Association, and they host conferences, I understand.
BPA. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. It's mainly high school students that are thinking about a career in business. And so there's speakers and lecturers about what kind of jobs there are, what kind of education you need, and I'm sure it's all very helpful for those people that are going into business. I would just hope that they have some really good instruction on what is ethical, what is moral, and that a good business can also be good for the community.
Yeah.
You know, don't destroy the environment for the sake of short-term profit.
No.
I know that publicly traded companies are always concerned about the price of their stock shares and so on, and that's an issue. But remember, there's a lot of companies out there, and Ben and Jerry's, before they got bought by a larger corporation, that's in New Hampshire, the ice cream people.
Sure.
All the best organic ingredients and treating their workers well and giving them, you know, stock benefits and all kinds of things. You know, there's many, many good examples of small businesses that are doing the right thing for their community and for their employees. And so, you know, business... We all need businesses to sell us things that we need, hopefully high quality and without endangering the environment or hurting our friends and neighbors in any way. And that's a real challenge for the future. And I hope the best people go into business with that in mind, because otherwise it's just money and anything goes. And that's not good for anyone, including those companies that'll eventually go belly up.
And I think. Take that in every transaction in your life where things are win-win. You know, mm-hmm. where everybody has, there's no advantage to any one single entity, and I think that's a good way to go about life.
Right. We had a correction from last week, or at least an update. We had a caller last week. I had a little discussion about the Ambassador Bridge owner, we had a caller that said that I mispronounced his first, and I believe also his last name. Well, I wasn't making a joke about it, I did. It was just an honest mistake, as they say. Dennis, give us the definitive pronunciation.
Well, we do know that we're talking about the Ambassador Bridge, and the bridge is owned by Grosse Pointe Billionaire, and we did have a question as to his
I tried to say, well, he may not be a billionaire, folks, but certainly he's got millions. He's actually a billionaire.
And
billionaire.
His full legal name is Manuel Matty Maroon. And if we're pronouncing Maroon, this is how I've heard it, actually, mm-hmm. and a couple other people have heard it pronounced in other news releases as Maroon, M-O-R-O-U-N. So Matty Maroon, the owner, the billionaire, Grosse Pointe owner.
So his last name is pronounced, I think, correctly as, and I think that's what I said, as the color maroon, which is a dark purple sort of maroon.
Sure.
Yeah. And
dark red.
Dark red, mm-hmm. whatever. Maroon. I could have called him Manny. I could have listened to the playback on the podcast, too, to find out how I did pronounce it. Because my cat at home is Manny. That's his name.
Okay.
That's the cat's name. I'm sorry. So that it might have been on my head. I see him every day, you know, many hours.
And I remember calling him Marty, and that was on
me.
So.
Okay. So
we apologize.
But, you know, if you actually didn't know his name was pronounced Maroon, that would be a possible pronunciation. But since it's R-O-U-N at the end, that could be pronounced Maroon.
Sure. Like,
and Maroon, it's... You didn't want to do that too quickly because it might come off sounding like moron.
Right.
And that would be a slight. I'm sure I didn't say that.
No.
I'm sure I didn't pronounce that. So always great to get people's names right. That wasn't probably Maddie that was calling, but,
but thank you,
nothing
whoever
wrong
did,
with that.
For
yeah.
Sure.
And you know, too bad he has been indicted now for being $200 million behind in his improvements on the Detroit River. And that's an official court thing. So that's, you know, he is guilty of that. Imagine being guilty of $200 million of lack of investment after you apparently contracted. That's a little beyond my pocket change, but apparently being a billionaire, which means you have the cash for investments, you can take care of that. As our research pointed out, he also owns the duty-free store.
That's right.
And the gasoline and diesel sales there, too. Which are duty free, so you get to buy gas or diesel. If you've gone over the bridge or come back, you can buy it cheaper than anybody else, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, taxes are
because there's no tax.
Right.
On it.
That's a huge part of it. You don't realize it until you go to the duty free place. Or I was on I guess it was an illegal Indian reservation, and they had you know, a lot of the things are tax free.
An illegal Indian reservation?
A legal.
Oh, a legal one, yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't know the difference between.
Well,
legal
I think
and
they're all legal if they're called an Indian reservation.
Well, thank you. Anyway, I was a little bit surprised at how much cheaper things are with when you take the tax out of the equation.
Yeah.
I think they do the same thing at military bases, too, right?
Yes, right. Yeah, on the base, right, for the service people who are getting paid almost nothing, unlike so-called contractors, that is mercenaries who we've employed higher for the Iraq War and Afghanistan War than ever before. They get on the average $150,000 to $200,000 a year. Of course, they're putting their lives out there, but our people are getting like minimum wage, you know.
Yeah, but they have free room and board.
And they got health benefits as long as they survive.
Yes. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
And tax-free conveniences.
At the end of last year, there's a very good email that I get weekly. It's called Green Car Reports. Yep. And it's greencarreports.com. And you can either sign up for the almost daily or weekly information from them about, you know, hybrid cars and other cars that are good for the environment. Well, they also point out in some of their essays the downside of some of the problems with going this way. For example, the Prius and the all-electric car, the Prius being a hybrid and the all-electric cars are out there in the road, you realize since they get great gas economy, or in the case of the electrics, don't use any gasoline, they're not paying the taxes that are part of what we just talked about, the sale of every gallon of gas or diesel. And they're significant. Those taxes are...
Oh, my gosh, yes.
How
much of the price do you think is tax?
You know, I wish we had the definitive answer here, but it seems to me... it looks here... Wait a minute.
You got it?
The report concludes that for the average state, the value of the gasoline tax was... the tax increase was 6.8% or 20% since it last raised. So it's 20%. Okay, it's 20%. So out of $4, it would be 80 cents.
Yeah.
Wow. That is the gas tax. And what does that go for? Supposedly it goes to repair the infrastructure. That is, the roads that the cars drive on.
Right.
And the bridges that are needed to cross over bodies of water and other roads. Guess what, folks? We're about $50 billion behind in financing the infrastructure repairs. In other words, we don't have enough money in the federal government, in the state governments, to fix the roads and the bridges that need to be fixed. They're fixing the worst ones, but the others, keep your fingers crossed.
Right, right, right.
There'll be potholes, there'll be ridges.
And they don't get better, by the way.
No.
As they are driven on.
So the recommendation is, this is... from everybody that's part of this, is raise state gas taxes to make up for lost revenue. index them to keep pace with construction cost inflation in the future, and create or enhance tax credits for low-income families to offset the impacts of the increases.
I guess.
So on their income taxes, they'll get some rebate because, you know, they haven't made that much money, and it's just always after the fact is tough. They've got to come up with the money at the pump, so to speak.
Sure, sure.
In order to pay for the gas in the first place. But 80 cents on it, I mean, how bad would it be to raise it 10 more cents on the gallon? I know you're all going, oh, no, no, Koronek, don't suggest that. But this is the appropriate way to go. When all cars will be less polluting and less dependent on foreign oil, okay, in about 10, 15 years, how are we going to pay for the roads?
Right.
Road repairs and bridge repairs. We won't have any way to do that.
And this doesn't take into account the idea. And, of course, this is right on the horizon. Gas prices going up because there will be, with the sanctions on Iran.
But this can be the incentive to getting into a more economical car or a hybrid or an all-electric car in the future.
But then it's still...
This extra gas, but you say, whoa, gas costs so much, I got to get a more economical car.
Yeah, and then there will be less people buying gas and even less money for the roads. Do you see what I mean?
Right.
The money for the roads has to come from somewhere, and it can't be the gas, because what you're saying is perpetuating the opposite.
Right. Now, there's also, of course, the other tie-in here is alternative forms of certainly metro transit, if not long distance.
Right.
How would you balance economies of scale for improving the railroad lines for long distance travel? And, of course, trains pollute, especially modern trains, much less than airplanes.
Absolutely.
In terms of travel from one city to another. I know it takes longer, but the high-speed rail, if we ever get it. Okay, so some of these investments, and of course they have this plan now in Detroit, not for light rail, not for a rail transit throughout the city, but for increased bus service.
Right.
Super buses, what was the name? That the state of Michigan now said, we're not going to put any more money into building a metro rail system for Detroit, or any money at all. We think we can do a better metro bus grid with buses that are like high speed. I mean, that some would be express
some lanes for them,
yeah, and better service. And they think because of the flexibility of actual vehicles like this, which could be electric or they could be hybrid or they could be natural gas powered for the environment, they'd be more flexible to changing population patterns too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can change a bus route. You can't change a train route.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to have the new tracks. Mm-hmm. You can change it immediately. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, there's always consequences. I don't know, you ever play Sims City?
I have.
It's a game like 30, 40 years old, and there's all kinds of variations of it now. But I noticed there's versions for like an iPad you can get and so on, that you want to have a certain city design with population one place and business another place and so on. And as you add features and elements, the game sort of ages, usually faster than normal, and shows you the negative consequences. If you have more population in one area, you're going to need more businesses, or they're going to have to drive longer distances, and that's going to burn up more gas and so on.
Right, that doesn't even... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, there's so many consequences. It's a real learning experience
about
urban planning, and the game now, after decades of improvement, has really become very good at a lot of this factoring. So I'm not recommending that our elected officials use it, because they have even better, more sophisticated tools available. But it certainly would show the average person how there's always consequences, even of new ideas.
Oh, yeah.
But you can balance those off, and you can still move ahead, but you have to be aware that when one thing changes, other things will change too.
That game can make
it all change for the better, or most of it anyway.
That's a really good good example. So do you mess around with Sims, or have you?
No, it's too frustrating because in a way, I always lose.
Yeah.
Something always goes out of control.
Right. You get something going well. You didn't do the nuclear power.
I mean, you'd have to put it. No, not,
good,
you know,
good.
They have one like that. But there's always consequences that you're not expecting, and it seems to always be a bad outcome unless you put hours and hours and hours. And that's how to play any video game, I guess.
Role-playing or whatever.
Tons of hours in to learn the right way to do it, to win, if you will. In this case, winning is just maintaining a good, balanced city.
Right.
Or other things. Again, the Sim City, there's Sim-like goldfish bowls and things like that you can try to maintain.
Sim World. There's Sim everything.
Yes.
Sure, sure.
Right.
And Sim, of course, stands for stimulated, right?
Simulated, not stimulated.
What did I say?
I thought I heard that. Stimulated.
Okay, I think we all know what I meant.
All right. A couple things from Patch.com, because it is a slow news week, folks, in the papers. There are some opinions that we might jump into today. Yes, opinions from other people, imagine. Remember, all opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those at Henry Ford Community College, and they haven't told us what to say or not to say. So thank you very much. And from Patch Today, just today, and that's a good website to go to, folks, or to get their daily email, dearborn.patch.com, okay? To supplement, of course, the newspapers in Dearborn, the Times-Herald, and the Press and Guide. But they have a story here, and here's a question, here's an issue for a newspaper editor like Dennis, where the headline doesn't seem representative of the story, in fact, but it's... It looks good for Dearborn. Dearborn, in the latest crime statistics for the metropolitan area, that's probably Wayne, Oakland, Macomb counties,
right?
We rank 199 out of 400. So it seems we're about at the middle. We don't have the worst crime, we don't have the best crime. But if you look at the details, and this is only for cities over 75,000.
Okay, this is pretty big cities.
Yeah, because generally big cities you think of as having the most crime. In fact, a few small cities have terrible amounts of crime percentage-wise.
Percentage-wise.
Because drug dealers say, hey, let's move to Podunk, Iowa.
Well, we've talked about that. Yeah, if we have one murder more this year, it goes up 50%.
Yeah, the rates are...
Because it's so low to begin with.
Well, it turns out that Dearborn did rank almost 18 points above the national average for crime, because we were halfway down the list, but still the national average. And I don't know what 18 points means, but we're above average in terms of crime in cities over, or metro areas over 75,000. And we have, of course, about 100,000 people here in Dearborn. But also the story indicates that the annual crime report also names Detroit, Livonia, Dearborn as the metro area, so that's not Oakland County, is it, with the highest amount of crime in the nation.
Wait a minute.
Yep. Now, I don't know how they picked Detroit, Livonia, and Dearborn.
Well, the only thing Dearborn and Livonia...
As a metro area. I mean, yeah. I've never heard of us being joined together in that way. But Detroit, Livonia, Dearborn, this is what the story says. Talk to Jessica Carreras if you want to. Okay. Email her to find out what the... as the metropolitan area... out of the 400, with the highest amount of crime in the nation. So I don't know, but Dearborn is only 18 points above the national average.
Is Livonia,
in terms of cities.
I grew up in Livonia, and
yeah,
I did
too.
See that as high in crime. I don't.
Maybe things have changed.
You know, Dearborn and Livonia have something really important in common, and that's that they were the two cities hit hardest by the, remember the what was it? The money that comes back to school districts when they pay in a bigger
mm-hmm.
amount.
Mm-hmm.
What is that called? J? Something J. Whatever. Anyway, but we have that has nothing to do with Detroit at all. Does that make sense?
Well, it's startling to me that when it says, first of all, Dearborn is down in the middle in metro crime, but Dearborn as part of a Detroit-Livonia metro area is the highest amount of crime in the nation. Hey, say yes to Michigan. We're number one again.
But maybe if you took Livonia and Dearborn out of that.
Detroit and Livonia. So Detroit being 700,000 people, that must be a major cause of that numbers being added. Because Dearborn, the story already says, we're a little above average.
You know what?
But we're only halfway down out of 400 cities.
Are they talking about the triangle formed by Dearborn, Livonia, Detroit? Because that would be...
Like the Bermuda Triangle?
Well, I'm just saying Livonia is as far west as Wayne County goes, you know, and it's as far
north.
It's
a big area. Within the city limits of Livonia, it's a big...
Huge square.
Right, yeah.
8 Mile to Joy, I believe.
Yeah.
And then
now, as a city, though, the next statement says Detroit placed third on the list, behind St. Louis, Missouri, and Camden, New Jersey. So we weren't Detroit, you weren't number one. But Detroit, Livonia, Dearborn... That area.
We can't even
put
get
the three
right.
together, and we're the highest crime. Well, okay, Dearborn is down and a little above the average. Detroit is number three, but if you add Livonia, we're number one. Well, what are these other metro areas? I mean, what are the other combinations they're comparing it with? I don't know. There's all these questions here, and what I'm saying is, folks, when you read these stories, it's a little bit of a media literacy show. You know, that's what we do here. I'm a telecom professor. I want you to be aware that the headline doesn't necessarily state the substance, or the gist, even, of the story itself. And the story itself you can glance over it, but it raises a whole bunch of questions.
Right.
Like, how can those three cities together be number one in the crime in the nation? And then, of course, I look back at what do they call crime? And, of course, it's all the real serious stuff, I guess, murder, rape, robbery, aggravated assault, burglary, and motor vehicle theft. But what about drug sales?
I know.
I guess that's not considered major crime.
What's the major nonviolent crime?
Right. Maybe they don't include this. So the crime statistics are for
violent
so-called
crime?
Violent crime or major violent crime or
which
whatever.
Which is usually what scares people. That's
because are there still things like numbers rackets and,
I don't know.
Off-track betting and...
The purple gang still hangs out in Livonia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know gambling is kind of legal in casinos in Michigan, but there must still be on the street. And loan sharking?
Sure.
That must still go on, I assume.
That'll always go on.
But that's... You know, it's not included here, so I wonder how we stand with that. Well, okay, so there's that story. And then we mentioned a while back that it looked like a Goodwill store was trying to consider coming into the community over there, one of the Newman properties in West Dearborn. And they're making their final proposal, presentation.
What was the name of the place? Aztec Computer? Was that
I think that's the store.
Inca? Inca.
Yeah. Where I'm looking for my Dearborn patch.
Right here.
Oh, okay.
There you are, sir.
Okay, so staring right at the piece of paper so we get this right. The organization, that is Goodwill Industries, Goodwill of Greater Detroit, is set to present their store plan with the Dearborn City Planning Commission on Monday, January 9th. And on the 12th, they'll head to the Zoning Board of Appeals, where they'll be seeking approval to build a store within a residential neighborhood. It's a move usually prohibited for, quote-unquote, secondhand stores. Ooh, we don't want those secondhand stores. And one that required the Goodwill team to collect signatures from any residents and businesses within 700 feet of the store's proposed location.
Well, there's a lot of residences.
Behind them
is
a train track, isn't there?
And then huge residence.
But 700 feet, that's only like 10 or 15 houses on the first street. It's not park. Is park the first street?
That's two football fields. That's huge. 700.
Yeah, but there's a train track there.
Right, and then right over that is the old historic, what do they call it, part of Dearborn.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure it gets into the historic neighborhood, but Park is part of the historic neighborhood. I'm not sure if it goes all the way over to Military.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Isn't this Military Road
it's right there.
We're talking about
separator.
On the north side of that,
yep.
If it's the property we're thinking of, and we think it is. So anyway, Inca Computers, I think the name might still be up there, and this was introduced to the Dearborn City Council in November.
No, it looks different now. The facade of the
building
is different.
So if they get support for that, I'm just spinning down at the end. They hope to sign the lease and then apply for a permit to start construction as soon as Friday, January 13th. So that's real quick.
That's
Friday.
A week from today. Is the fear that because it's a resale store and things are cheaper, it'll attract people with what? I don't get it. Because it says there's different...
These days, everybody who is having economic trouble needs to shop at a store nearby where they can get things less expensively.
Right.
And so I don't, in the olden days, Dearborn might say, well, a secondhand store is lower class and it'll bring down property value, and it means that everybody in the area is just poor people. Well, a lot of people are poor in this area, so
yeah.
Give them a convenient store to shop at.
But was that why the extra regulations?
Or it's unfair competition for the big-name stores because the prices are so much lower.
Plus,
so
they're selling big-name stuff.
Who knows why? I would assume that considering the economic climate today, and Goodwill is certainly a well-known name and it operates other stores,
sure.
which actually are pretty well-maintained in other places. I think I remember seeing the one in there's one on Ford Road. Pretty far west, and there's one in Royal Oak, and they look pretty classy compared to some other retail stores.
And
so,
what a good cause. I mean, the money goes. It's not a for-profit.
Right. In fact, a letter written in support of the store came from Sacred Heart Pastor Peter Petrosky.
I'll be right across the street.
Yeah, and he hopes that will help, too, along with the petitions and the signature. So they'll start, if they get permits, it doesn't have to go to the council. They can start construction next Friday because the building is there. They just have to do probably interior remodeling.
They've already done something on the outside. It already looks a little bit different.
And they think they can have the store open in April. April. There you go.
All right.
So good for them, or good for the community anyway, but that's the report from DearbornPatch.com today. So you can stay up to date that way. I don't know, did we mention, well, the presidential primary is coming up in Michigan on February 28th, and it's just for Republicans.
Maybe. They're trying to...
Well, the Democrats are suggesting that the Republicans should cancel the primary to help save jobs.
You're thinking, no way, right?
It's money. It's costing the state of Michigan $10 million, and it's basically just further publicity for the Republican Party candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the will of the people can choose the best Republican. Can they really? Maybe the Republicans can pick the best candidate among themselves, although the straw poll among Republicans in Iowa had questionable results.
Yeah, Bachman.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm just saying Iowa is not Michigan, not New York, is not California. But that's why they have their nominating convention. They get representatives elected by their party. And if there is a primary, then in many states, they have to vote on the first ballot for president within that party. To the percent, or in some cases, all of those delegates have to be voting for the winner of the primary, or even just the plurality, the winner, who gets the most votes, even
right.
if it's not the majority votes. So it depends on each state how they play that game. It's all up to the party itself to decide how tied they will be to the presidential primary. I can't remember in Michigan how the Republicans do it. Will the candidate with the greatest numbers get all the Republican votes on the first ballot at the Republican convention? And is that going to be in Tampa?
I don't know.
This year?
Anyway. And now I know this is surprised me. This has been done, I think, as recently as 2004, where they had to cancel. Was that both the Democrat and the Republican primaries that were canceled in 2004? Do you remember, or was it just the Democrats?
Well, it would all be done on the same day, of course.
Because you
can't save money. But the Democrats in the state of Michigan said they're not going to do one. Well, that's because they don't want any competition for Obama. He's a sitting president. He has, you know, every sitting president has a pretty good chance of reelection.
Sure.
I mean, they just do. They got the name recognition. They're already president. They've been proving themselves or not for the last 3 years, three and a half years. And so they're not going to participate, and they're suggesting Republicans shouldn't do it. I say, and here's my humble opinion, we don't need any primaries, okay? You want to influence who your party picks? Get active in your party. That's it. Because telling the story of who's the best candidate, the Republicans have been doing first time ever this dozens of primaries, all on TV for no charge to the Republican Party, all advertising Republican Party values and principles, although they differ from candidate to candidate. And we get the candidate of the week, the flavor of the week. Right now it's Rick Santorum is up there for inspection. But, you know, to what point? To what purpose? Can a TV show that gives somebody 3 minutes of a soundbite, and if they look attractive, like Santorum and or Romney, that's going to get them more points on television? Is that the way to pick a candidate? Is that the way? I mean, most of the Iowa voters, after all these debates, the majority went in saying, I don't know who I'm going to vote for. And these are Republicans in Iowa who chose to go to the caucuses, as it was called. It wasn't an election. It was just a vote within the party, straw poll in a way, a little more important than a straw poll. And they didn't even know who to vote for after all this time, because they only know what they saw on television, and that wasn't enough. And it's all very confusing, too. It all sort of just, you know, boggles your sensibilities. More than anything, to me, I think it's one long extended attack on President Obama as a sitting president. Sure, they're debating among themselves their differences, but they're constantly haranguing the president. And I know as a sitting president, he always can do a press conference, and he's always influencing signing bills or not. So there you go. But this just seems way out of control, because there's more than two political parties that will be with their candidates on the ballot next November.
See, but
they're not getting any publicity here for free. They're not getting any attention. And they have, to them, valid platforms and programs, and they're not part of the Michigan primary. Why? Because they're not allowed to be. That's right. Even if they wanted to be, they wouldn't be allowed. Why? Because the Democrats and Republicans control who gets into that primary. So even if your Green Party said, we want to be part of the primary, they can't be by Michigan state law. They can't be allowed in. Now, that's crazy, but hey, they can choose who their best candidate is on their own, but they don't get any publicity. They don't get any name recognition in advance, with one exception. And that is, on December 28th, a former governor, two-term governor of New Mexico, Gary Johnson, who was a Republican, he has now turned libertarian, and he has tossed his hat in the ring, as they say, for the Libertarian Party nomination for president of the U.S. He has a website, Gary Johnson, talk about a good old American name, GaryJohnson2012.com. And this is the first time the Libertarian Party, which is 40 years old this year, by the way, it's been around for 40 years, and they've had candidates, and they will be on the ballot in every state. Every state you can vote Libertarian. Green Party, not quite up to that number, even after all these years. But nonetheless, I just think they finally got somebody that has held political office, who has been elected. They always say, well, he's not electable. He's never held political office. Well, Gary Johnson has for two terms in New Mexico. Republican, conservative, but in fact, he's more of a libertarian. That his views, I'd say they're a little different than Ron Paul's, but in fact, he's such a significant threat or factor here is that during Rachel Maddow's show this last Tuesday, when they were primarily talking about the Iowa vote count, they had a late-breaking announcement. Gary Johnson has pulled out of the race for president on the Libertarian ticket, and he's now endorsing Ron Paul. And they said that right out front. 5 minutes later, Rachel had to come back on the air and say, oops, that was a false lead. Somebody had told us. We didn't check on it with Gary Johnson, and he has not. He is in the race as a Libertarian for the nomination of on the ticket to be President of the United States as a Libertarian. And I'm not endorsing him. I'm just saying, at least they, as a party, they finally got name recognition, and he's creating a little bit of a stir in the midst of all this Democrat-Republican and primarily Republican PR. So it's good to know that we have good people running for office, and we have a variety of choices. And on this show, we really believe you need to understand all your choices and make the best choice you can after you find out more information about them. So good luck there in finding out about what these people really stand for. But we hope to have someone representing one of the candidates, if not a couple, that are going to be on the Republican primary ballot. But I don't think, and Dennis is helping me try to get a name or whatever, I don't think we should go for the leaders. I think people know Romney pretty well, especially from this state. We remember that Romney, as well as a few others, said there shouldn't be a bailout of GM and Chrysler, and just let them go belly up. So that kind of heartlessness, I think, from a businessman too, when, hey, that money's all been paid back now, Romney, and all the jobs have pretty much been saved, and those two companies are doing pretty good now. Chrysler better than ever, according to a story in the Press and Guide even this week. Okay, it's owned by an Italian company, Fiat, but, you know, Ford, yeah, they didn't need the bailout. They're still there. I'm sure Ford would have hoped that the other two companies would have gone belly up, but yeah. They would have been the number one car company in the U.S. They
I just have, saw a headline briefly yesterday or the day before that said, after a bailout, GM building plants in China, sending work to China. So I didn't read the article, but again, this happens all the time.
Well, they're a big potential market for automobiles, and if we don't get into that, they're passing up on a lot of profit.
Sure, absolutely. So. Yeah, but I think that the headline, and again, we've talked about this, headline's different than stories. I will go back and read it, but I think the headline was implying that we're sending work there as opposed to investing it to...
Yeah, I don't think so. No, I don't think they're going to be bringing many Chinese cars through GM back to the U.S. It could happen, but that's not their goal primarily. No. It's to sell, of course, to the Chinese who are desperate for that corrupt American lifestyle, you know, capitalistic lifestyle.
The opinions expressed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the finer things in life, higher standards of living and more wastefulness and more luxury items and so on, like food. And, you know, I mean, they're that's the way their country is going right now, and the terrible pollution, environmental problems, but at least they're going to have high-speed rail. Yes, at least.
You always find that silver lining.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move on here. Here's a couple comments about the year 2012 from Jim Hightower, our Austin-based progressive commentator on the world. Hope he challenges your thinking. Take a close listen. Don't tune him out. And we'll be back with more of our local new WHFR Journal comments right after these comments.
As an old country saying puts it, money is like manure. It does no good unless you spread it around. Yet, America's corporate and political leaders have intentionally been shoveling wealth into an ever bigger pile for those at the top. They've gotten away with this by lying to the great majority, which has seen its share of America's prosperity steadily disappearing. Yes, they've told us the rich are getting richer, but that's just the natural workings of the new global economy in which financial elites are rewarded for their exceptional talents, innovation, and bold risk-taking. Horse duties. The massive redistribution of America's wealth from the many to the few is happening because the rich and their political puppets have rigged the system. Years of subsidized offshoring and downsizing, gutting labor rights, monkey-wrenching the tax code, legalizing financial finagling, dismantling social programs, increasing the political dominance of corporate cash. These and other self-serving acts of the moneyed powers have created the conveyor belt that's moving our wealth from the grassroots to the penthouses. Not since the Gilded Age, which preceded and precipitated the Great Depression, have so few amassed so much of our nation's riches. Having learned nothing from 1929's devastating crash, nor from their own bank failures in 2008 that crushed our economy, the wealthiest of the wealthy fully intend to keep taking more for themselves at our expense. This is Jim Hightower saying, now, however, the people are on to their lies. In an October poll, 2/3 of Americans support increased taxes on millionaires, an end to corporate tax subsidies, and policies to more evenly distribute the wealth we all help create. This rising egalitarianism shows the true American character and is changing our politics for the better.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The powers that be constantly try to pull the wool over people's eyes. But sometimes the wool blinders are so itchy that people rip them off and clearly see the scam. One of the itchiest ever is the Kafkaesque fiction put forth by America's right-wing power establishment that corporations are persons with the constitutional right to control our elections with their bottomless troves of corporate cash. This is an absurd perversion of nature itself. A person, after all, has a navel. Where's the corporate navel? Or its heart, brain, or soul? Also, if a corporation is a person, shouldn't it be subject to frontline military duty, to jail for its criminal violations, and even to the death penalty? As a listener pointed out to me in a recent email, many states do not allow persons under 18 years of age to marry, or, in corporate terminology, to merge. Plus, such young persons are subject to curfews and cannot legally be served alcohol. If you see a young corporation violating any of these teen laws, call the cops on them. When a corporate and governmental cabal makes such a power play that the very idea of it becomes a national joke, both the idea and the cabal are in trouble. That's the case with a comical claim of personhood for corporations. All across the country, beneath the radar of America's clueless elites, a savvy and scrappy grassroots coalition is mobilizing to overturn the anti-democratic effort by the Supreme Court, corporate front groups, and political sellouts to enthrone corporate money over the people. On January 20th and 21st, there will be two national days of action to rally public support for a constitutional amendment to reject the farce of corporate personhood. This is Jim Hightower saying, to join the rebellion, connect with www.movetoamend.org and www.democracyisforpeople.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, January 6, 2012. And Jay Kornick and Dennis Reimar is with you here, expressing opinions and giving you a little more in-depth insight to some of the issues coming up here in Michigan. We do recommend a number of editorials in the Press and Guide and the Times Herald this week. We don't have time to read them out loud completely, but good thought pieces. For example, today was the funeral of Sam Logan. In fact, even WDT said there might be some traffic holdups around 8 Mile Road, where the at a funeral parlor where Sam Logan, where the funeral is happening today. He was the late publisher of the Michigan Chronicle, the newspaper. Yes, it was mostly African American issues and community, but one of those local voices of important information that you can't get in the other big time commercial media. And so Governor Snyder had a very nice tribute and, you know, one of those tribute bills they passed and statement about the loss of Sam Logan. And I don't know if the Michigan Chronicle supported him for governor or not. I suspect not. But nonetheless, it was a very nice tribute. And, in fact, that tribute is indicated in the Dearborn Press and Guide. Let's see, from last Sunday. There is a great section that doesn't happen every week of actions in the legislature, bills that have been passed in Lansing, and the editor Tim Powers and someone else, I'm not looking at the page right now, help him write up the description of the bills and the laws, and it's kind of interesting to see what laws are passed. Of course, Governor Snyder, and this is where I saw the item, it's on page 13A from January 1st edition of the Dearborn Press and Guide, about the new bills that have been signed into law by Governor Snyder. One that he signed, besides the tribute to Sam Logan, talked about ending or prohibiting live-in benefits for government employees. So we're talking same-sex marriage, partnerships, whatever, that the state of Michigan is not going to pay the extra health care and insurance cost for a live-in partner anymore. Now, of course, a public institution, besides so-called government institutions, are public universities, and public universities all provide partner benefits for their people. And there's a question even raised by the editorial in the Dearborn Times Herald from this last week, call it the Wednesday 4th edition, January 4th edition. Their editorial, which always comes from the Jackson Citizen Patriot, those people are really busy. They have editorial opinions every week.
They do.
Yeah, and then they share them, which is so magnanimous. the sloppy state law dealing with live-in benefits probably is heading for the courts. So whether they're in favor of or not, because it will save money for the state of Michigan, of course, whenever you cut out benefits or wages, it'll save somebody money, but is that good in the long run? But even they say it's a sloppy written law, and it's going to be tied up in the courts for years. So legislators, come on, if you're going to write a law, let's make it written in a way that won't cause that kind of havoc. And if that's the first rule, let's be a good legislator and not just pass something that's so imprecise and vague that it's going to be fought over in the courts for years and years. But also, I have to say, and here comes my opinion on this, I think statistics clearly show that domestic partnerships, whether you call them marriages or call them close friendships, people living together, you know, same sex or not, it's good for your health.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Those people get sick less often. Those people that have those kinds of close single partner that they lived with are going to live longer. They're going to be happier, however you define that.
Right.
Leave that to other people. But studies that talk about mental well-being. And by golly, I think they get into less trouble. If you've got somebody to share the questions of life with, sure, there's give and take. Sure, partnerships are always difficult. Dennis is still married, so...
I am.
Yeah. I tried it twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, oh well. You know, success, the first one was for, I think, 11 or 12 years, and the second one, 12 or 13. So I'm getting better at it.
Absolutely.
You know, yep. Getting better at it next time around. But my point is, I can't see how that kind of close, compassionate relationship, whether it's love or sex or marriage or whatever, whether it's same sex or two different sexes, as long as it's not including animals, I think that's good for all society. That's my personal opinion. And I know that people with different belief structures from religion, certain religions or whatever, have different opinions on that. And you're certainly welcome to that opinion. But all the studies show those kinds of close domestic partnerships are good for the people involved, and they're good for society as a whole in terms of social costs and social benefits. And so whether you want to sanctify them in court or in a church or just among yourself, I think it's well worth the money to try to encourage them. But that's just my personal feeling looking at objective statistics for the society as a whole. If you don't support that, fine. Don't support it. Don't do it. Tell your kids they shouldn't if that's how what you believe.
But the living arrangement has less to do with the benefits. And I guess what I'm saying is if they do not get the benefits, it doesn't mean the couple's going to split up regardless of gender.
No.
So this has
an encouragement. It's an encouragement.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you're looking at that.
And way. Or equity. I mean, certainly same-sex partners say, look, just because we're two different sexes, if you're officially married, even in a civil court, and you're a man and a woman, you almost automatically, in every one of these businesses, including the state of Michigan government employees, you get to share the health benefits and the insurance benefits. But here we are exactly the same, except we're of the same sex. We get no. So there's a lack of equity there.
Right.
I mean, it's a question of equity in the same situation. The only difference is man-woman, man-man, or woman-woman.
Right.
So is there equity problems or not? The courts will have to take that up, of course. Many courts, many states have, you know, they've approved same-sex marriage.
They have, absolutely.
And doesn't look like it's worked out so badly for those states. I mean, some of you would feel they're setting a bad example. So we're going to move on.
Yeah, okay. I was just going to say, this is still such a new idea that there has to be some growth. But I know what you're saying, and I appreciate your open-mindedness.
Yeah. Well, I think, did it already happen, or is it coming up this Sunday? There'll be the last episode of All American Muslim.
Yeah.
There was only 8 episodes. Whether or not there'll be a second season, I'm not sure. We wanted pillory more than just Home Depot. Mm-hmm. Kayak.com. Kayak.com has been advertising a lot on TV recently in their own separate commercials, but they were also a sponsor specifically of All American Muslim, and they backed out too.
Right.
About a week or so after Home Depot.
And my understanding is that's the reason the show's not continuing, because nobody will pay for it. It's nothing to do with, I mean, there's people watching
it. I'm not sure it's going to continue, whether or not they'll find other sponsors. But it's a question, I think, and I mentioned this before, just what are the numbers? How many people are watching it?
Right.
If the numbers aren't high enough, they won't get any sponsors, whether they're biased, bigoted, or not, because the sponsor always is concerned about the number of people watching and the demographics. Is it rich people, poor people, a lot of middle class, more men, more women, what age group? So they look at the whole picture of who is watching, and then they make their ad decisions. Now, if they use decisions that are based on some other criteria, it's a private business. They have a right to do that. And, of course, shoppers have a right to then either buy or not buy the products
of
those companies.
But, so, I mean, something that made it popular is the fact that they were going to pull advertising in the first place. It's kind of like when Salman Rushdie wrote Satanic Verses and all the hoopla about it, a lot of people wouldn't have bought it otherwise. Does that make, you know what I mean?
Right.
You bring attention to something, and now I have to watch this show that the advertisers won't, you know, that brings a lot to it. And that, I understand the numbers were good, is what I'm saying.
Well, they were good initially. And of course, the rationale from the first group that got to Home Depot, apparently, was that it shows Muslims as nice people, as average people. And that's a dangerous thing to do. But if it's true, if many of them are, and they are, I'm living here,
we
folks.
Know,
in
we
Dearborn.
Know firsthand, exactly.
I don't know all the Muslims living in Dearborn, but a large number, dozens and dozens, hundreds working here at the college and also educating themselves as students here. Nice people, all of them. I've never had a run-in negatively with any of them. Of course, I don't have run-ins with anybody else.
Right.
Well, not for many years anyway. It had nothing to do with religion. So, okay. So, okay. We are moving on here. Some of the other opinions that I think you should look at is in the Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, Tim Skupik talks about Governor Snyder's wife preferring to be in the background. And a little background on her. And Dennis, last week I asked you the lieutenant governor's name. Do you know Governor Snyder's Lieutenant wife's first name?
Virginia.
It's Sue.
Everybody knows it's Virginia.
It's Sue. So she's quite successful at being in the background.
I have to ask you. Yeah. I thought it was Virginia. That was his first wife. Are you going to ask me something I don't know each week? Because I'm starting to enjoy this.
Yeah, well, I might try to clue you in so you could do some looking this up. But right. That's wonderful if she can stay in the background. You know, Governor Snyder still has 3 more years to go,
sure.
And he is certainly a non-traditional Republican governor.
Yes, he
and,
is.
And has a lot of disputes and problems facing him in the next couple of years. But and I've disagreed with many of the things he's done, but he has a plan and consistency that is, I think, refreshing.
But didn't he get his daughter involved in his campaign? Wasn't she part of the...
I think the daughter, only one daughter? Yeah, whatever, yes.
Because I remember DeVos, years ago, DeVos had his whole family in every... It was crazy.
Okay. Well, I also want to bring your attention, folks, and again, you're going to go to pressandguide.com website, and I hope the editorial opinions are there. They weren't a couple years ago. But Craig Farrand, that's F-A-R-R-A-N-D, has a great editorial entitled Congress's Inaction this last year, Action on Payroll Tax Impending Progress. It's quite extensive. It goes on for a couple pages. So we suggest that you read that and think about that. We're talking about the federal government here, but that's a local opinion. And it's the time of year we need to think about our directions, I think. That's very, very important. Jack Lessenberry also in the Metro Times this week, Year of Decision. GOP, question mark? In other words, this is the year we vote for president, so are you going to vote for Republican, whoever that might be, or President Obama? And pro and con, he does a great job, very balanced. You know, Jack Lessenberry is not as balanced as he usually is. Of course, he's not in favor of Republican in general, but right. The whole question is, if you don't like what Obama's done or hasn't done enough, do you then turn around and vote for Republican? Bad idea, he says, and then read his reasoning on that. I decided many years ago, because I did it in one election, and I won't mention who, but it was a protest vote. I voted for the other major party because I didn't like the person chosen in the party I usually vote for, or usually did vote for in that time. This was like 40 years ago. Oh my gosh, that was 4 years of hell. And in my head was the fact I voted for this person.
Right. It was just a joke.
It was never vote as punishment,
being vindictive
for one
sure.
party. Don't vote angry in that way, because you'll be sorry. You'll really be sorry. And I'm suggesting there's other people to vote for too. And there's other ways, such as voting. You know, you can get involved with these parties, and it's ugly sometimes. Party politics in a local district, a local city, a local county. I was involved with the Democrats for a while and was part of a political lobbyist group, Common Cause, for a while, working as a public citizen, not public citizen group of Ralph Nader, but a public citizen trying to influence good government in every party. And it's tough. If you actually see the inner workings of politics, it's tough. It's hard to get things changed for the better. But if you're not involved in one way or the other, then nothing good will ever happen. Someone called me up from Sierra Club on the phone last night, because I am a lifetime member of the Sierra Club lobbyist group, environmental organization, largest one in the U.S. And they said, what can you do to help? We've got rules coming up in Washington, D.C. and in Michigan about setting a higher standard for fuel economy. And there's going to be testimony taken locally. Can you go and testify? Can you do this? Can you do that? I chose one of the above. I chose to do something, and that's great. That's, you know, it's not much, but it's something more than just giving money. It's actually getting involved and having your opinion expressed to your elected representative. It's amazing, but it's only like 1 or 2% of the population actually gives any feedback to their elected representatives. I couldn't believe it was that low, but most people don't get involved and never have anything to do. And we know how many people vote in elections.
But we hear them complaining.
Very few.
Right?
Well, sure. Yeah.
I think that's your point.
Yep. I think that was my point. All right. We have only 3 minutes to go, and Highway 61, the best in the blues here on WHFR, will be beginning shortly. And we have Lynn sitting in for Joanne, who's Still having a wild time in California with her family, I hope.
Can I brag about Tuesday afternoon? Lindsay and I will be doing Campus Connection Live on Tuesday at 1 o'clock from 1 to 2 right here on WHFR. And
what's that all about? What do we talk about on Campus Connection?
You know, we never know. No, actually, we Lindsay calls us the ambassadors.
Of Henry Ford Community College.
Sure, because we talk about what's going on at the school, but not just as it relates to the school, but how it relates to the outside communities as well. And one of the things we will be bringing up, because it falls, as you said, Jay, within our time frame, we're the second Tuesday of every month. On January 28th, Henry Ford Community College will present a big band and Chicago concert. That's January 28th, 8 p.m. at the Michael A. Guido Theater, Ford Community Performing Arts Center on Michigan Avenue. And the concert will feature HFCC's Henry Ford Big Band, as well as Midnight Blue, our top vocal jazz ensemble.
That's going to be a great, great performance, yeah. I'm sure. Usually they do something called the collage concert, but people
are
not sure.
Is that later? This is actually a prelude to HFCC's annual president.
Oh, it's going to be two big concerts at the center.
February 18th, this is the collage concert.
By the way, if you can't listen live to Campus Connection with Dennis and Lindsay Tuesday, 1 to 2 o'clock here on WHFR 89.3 FM or through the internet, WHFR.fm, you can always go to our website and listen to it as a podcast. Tuesday Forum, by the date, second Tuesday of every month. Mm-hmm. In this case, it'll be January
10th.
Mm-hmm.
The tickets for the Big Band in Chicago concert are $20 each, and they're available by calling 313-943-2354. That's 313-943-2354, or they are available in person at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center box office.
Yep, we're going to wrap up for now, and thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. Next week, on the 13th, lucky Friday the 13th, we're going to have a special interview by phone with Richard Greener. Richard Greener is the author of a couple of mystery detective-like books. The series is generally referred to as The Locator. Often murder mystery detective series have a key central detective policeman that it focuses on for a whole series, just like Kathy Reich's. The series has Temperance Brennan in the books. I think there's 14 Temperance Brennan thriller detective novels out there, and Richard Greener's Locator books have now been turned into a TV show, and it's called The Finder. Not The Locator, but The Finder, and it's going to debut in place of the Bones series for the month of January on Thursdays on CBS from 9 to 10 p.m.
Right.
Now, not plugging the show, I've seen the pilot episode, and it's good, might be interesting. This fellow he's not an official private detective, and there may be murders or not, but he finds things for people. He has sort of like a second sight, a great ability to he does research, okay, he doesn't just have a vision and go there. He does research, and he can find things for people, all kinds of things, and so I'm sure there'll be a great variety of plot lines on that, and it should be fun. But Richard Greener has an amazing background in terms of surviving and health information. He had heart problems for 30 years. This kind of problem, that kind of problem, and we're not going to go into all the ugly details of that, but he has some real and it's totally separate from his show, The Finder, which we can talk about because